Again, and welcome to episode 2 of the Post Meridian Radio Pod. I'm Neil Marsh, Managing Director of the Post Meridian Radio Players. Today we continue the 3-part podcast of Tomes of Terror 2, our 2007 live Halloween trilogy, featuring an adaptation of the chilling gothic vampire tale, Carmilla, written in 1872 by J. Sheridan LeFanu. The script used in our performance was originally written in 1981 for CBC Radio's infamous horror series Nightfall, by John Douglas and Graham Pomeroy. With permission from Mr. Pomeroy and the Douglas family, director Renee Johnson updated the script with additional material from the original novella to create an even more effective atmosphere of suspense and stark tension. Jessica Raine's uncanny musical arrangements only added to the spine-tingling effect this play had on the audience, many of whom cited this as their favorite play of the evening. So prepare yourselves now, as we return you to the library and your host.
Well, I believe you're all back. I did want to make sure we weren't missing a patron as we were last year. The Gorgon was the first to find that poor soul, sad to say. But you've all returned intact, and just in time, too, for I've discovered a little surprise for you. I was wandering through some of the older stacks when the title jumped out at me. Yes, it did. Flung itself right out of the stacks when my back was turned. I was most displeased. For it's my strict rule that books must keep themselves in the stacks and not go flying about. Otherwise, they risk considerable damage to the spine. This volume here is a very special book. It features one of the first original stories that created, no, first warned us about the dangers of the vampire. You may think it was Bram Stoker who provided the portentous prognostication, but no. The novella I discovered here was spun a full 20 years before Stoker's tale of Transylvanian terror. It was the work of Irish author Sheridan Le Fanu, who in 1872 wrote a ghost story of love, friendship, and mysterious marks on the breast. It also incorporated a litany of vampire facts, of which the compendium of knowledge lists quite a few, just in case we need help in identifying a vampire. The vampire is potentially immortal as long as he feeds on the blood of others. We know that. He casts no shadow, possesses no reflection, can change his shape, and has the power to cloud mortal minds and bend them to his will. Of course, these powers are in effect only at night. During the daytime, the vampire may roam freely, but without... Oh yes, the vampires are not vulnerable to sunlight. That myth was created by a motion picture of all things. Perhaps to spare movie audiences of 1922 a scene of gory finality. For you see, the only true way to dispose of a vampire is a stake through the heart and then decapitation. Perhaps we shall now, in our collective mind's eye, witness just such a frightening finale. Perhaps the forces of darkness will indeed prevail. We must listen carefully then, as the post-Meridian radio players present an adaptation of Sheridan Le Fanu's tale of gothic chills, Carmilla.
When I was a child, I filled my dreams with castles. I thought I was the luckiest girl in the world because I got to live in one. But when I grew up, the dream stretched out its arms to take me into its nightmarish embrace. We could never have afforded a real castle back home in England. When my mother died, my father moved us to the wilds of the Black Forest, where his income could provide for us comfortably.
So long as you're not frightened by rumors of trolls and coaches drawn by headless horses, Margaret, Germany should be quite pleasant.
Our little world was quite pleasant, if one didn't mind the shadows. And so it was, for years as I remember. We were often alone. There was only my father, the governess, and a few servants to keep me company. Alone in a wasteland of black firs, stretching to the horizon, I longed more than anything for a playmate my own age. The castle and the long white road unrolling before it, from one dark mouth of the forest to another, was never more magical than on that fateful night.
Margaret, Margaret, where are you, ma petite?
Here, madam, bathing in the moonlight.
Indeed, ma chère. It is a magical land of fairies and ghosts tonight. But you must not stay too long when the moon shines like silver all on fire. It is very dangerous.
Madam, your petite enfant is a grown woman now. No more stories to frighten children. Come, sit here by me. It's still bright as daylight.
I had a cousin once. He was a sailor. Like a fool, he fell asleep on deck in such a moon as this. As he slept, he dreamt of an old woman clawing at his face. When he awoke, one side of his face was horribly disfigured.
Oh, madam, you should have been German. You see the spirits as they do.
I am German, on my mother's side.
One would never have known it.
You've made fun of me, but I tell you, look at the castle windows.
How they flash and sparkle in the light.
It is as though unseen hands had lighted up the rooms to receive fairy guests.
Still trying to frighten my daughter, Madame Peridon? One would think you might have given up after all these years. Margaret doesn't know the meaning of fear.
Oh, Papa, Madame has been trying to convince me that the moon is a bad angel.
There are certainly some of them about. I have some rather sad news for you, Margaret. Would you excuse us, madam?
But of course, monsieur. I will...
Yes, madam?
Did you not hear a sound?
Nothing but the night. Margaret?
No.
Perhaps you are right, ma chère. Ah, I grow old.
So much beauty all around, Papa, and such a long face.
It's as if some great misfortune were hanging over us. Do you remember me speaking of my old friend, General Spielsdorf? I've had a letter from him.
How could I forget? You've promised that he'll bring his daughter Elizabeth to visit us, just as soon as she's well enough to travel. Oh, if you knew how I long to meet someone my own age. It's so lonely here.
I know. I'm afraid now you will have to wait even longer.
But his daughter is recovered.
His daughter is dead.
Oh, Papa.
You had better see the General's letter. I'm afraid he's suffering greatly. The letter appears to be written by a man nearly half crazed.
My dear Lauriston, during the last days of Elizabeth's illness, I could not write to you. And before then, I had no idea of her danger.
I have lost her, and now learn all about it too late. The fiend who betrayed our infatuated hospitality has done it all. And I swear before God, I will devote my remaining days to tracking and extinguishing this monster. Sometime in the autumn, my hunt will bring me to your area. I will then tell you all I dare not put on paper now. Farewell. Pray for me, dear friend.
Pray for me. Oh, Papa, the poor man.
What's that? Travelers? So late?
Monsieur, Margaret, a carriage is coming through the woods on the North Pole.
Do you hear how fast he drives? Those horses are whipped on by a madman.
But they will never...
They'll never take the curve by the great oak. Wolfgang, Manfred, come here, quickly. Schnell, schnell!
Here they are! Oh, Papa, they're going through, Monsieur!
What the heck? Wolfgang, Manfred, see if they're hurt. See if there's anything you can do for them.
I thank you, gentlemen. Thank you all. But there is no serious damage. You there, help my daughter, and be gentle as you go.
From the overturned carriage stepped unharmed a cold, imperious woman, all in black, commanding the frightened servants as they brought out the most beautiful young girl, about my age, and as pale as marble, who at first sight appeared to be...
Oh, La Belle! La Belle! Oh, she is dead! Oh, the young lady is dead!
For God's sake, Madame Peridon, control yourself!
Bring the young lady here, Manfred. As I thought, her pulse still beats. She's only fainted.
Dear Lord, we are lost. Lost.
My lady, your daughter is only suffering from shock. A night's rest, one night only, and you may ride on.
Alas, sir, that is exactly what I cannot do. I am on a journey of life and death in which to lose an hour is to lose all. I must go on with great haste. My poor child cannot come with me now. God forgive me. I must leave her in the closest village. Tell me, how far is it to the nearest inn?
Oh, Papa, please, ask her to stay with us. She's so pretty, and so alone. I do so want a friend, please.
Madam, would you do us the honor of leaving the young lady here as our guest until your return? She would be a welcome friend to my daughter, Margaret, and my servants would answer her every wish.
Sir, I cannot.
Oh, please.
You see, we insist.
Very well. Remember, it is at your own invitation.
But of course.
I shall return in 3 months. Until that time, my daughter cannot tell you who we are, where we are from, and where we are going. It is an old family custom. Thank you again.
My lady.
Yes?
Will you not say farewell to your daughter?
Oh, yes. When she awakens, by all means, tell her I kissed her. Farewell.
Au revoir. Her servants righted the carriage with astonishing speed, and the lady in black stepped swiftly into it. Only a moment later, the carriage, horses, and strange passenger had been swallowed by the dark forest. At the very moment when the last sound of wheels died away among the trees, the young lady opened her eyes.
My mother, where is she?
My dear young lady, your mother had no choice but to resume her journey immediately. You are to be our guest here for a time. Our name is Lauriston.
I am called Carmilla.
May I present my daughter, Margaret?
How do you do, Carmilla? You aren't hurt?
Oh, no. I think I was hurt once, but that was ever so long ago. How beautiful you are.
I was saying to your father only yesterday, ma chère. What a piece of luck. Is she not beautiful, this Carmilla? Here, scarcely a month, and already she loves you as much as we do. No, I swear, she loves you more.
She is very beautiful. Her affection is flattering, but...
Ah, you are too cold, you English. You see her stroke your hand, brush your fine hair by the hour.
I did so want a friend. Now I seem to have one indeed. But she is so different from anyone I have ever known.
Ah, these noble families. You have only to look at her to know she is of royal blood, though she will not say. They are often very odd. I remember once in France...
She appears to eat or drink almost nothing.
Pure delicatesse, Margaret. A refinement natural to her rank.
When we take even the shortest walk, she's exhausted almost at once. I sometimes think she may be ill.
Because she does not strut about like a peasant.
A funeral? Here? So far from anywhere?
It is the forest ranger's daughter. They found her dead this morning. Ah, la pauvre. I will go and say a prayer for her. Will you come?
No, madam. I promised to meet Carmilla here.
I will pray for both of us then. Do not stay out too long. It will be dark soon.
What is that hideous music?
Carmilla, those poor people are weeping, and you talk as though we were at a concert.
Don't you hear how discordant it is? Now it grates the ears.
On the contrary, I think it is very moving. Our religion is...
How can you tell if your religion and mine are the same?
Oh, but...
Your customs wound me. I hate funerals. What a fuss. Why, you must die. Everyone must die. Are you afraid of death?
Yes, everyone is.
But all are happier when they die.
I think she would have been happier to live.
She? I don't trouble my head about peasants. I don't even know who she is.
She's that poor girl who thought she saw a ghost a week ago. They say she's been dying ever since.
I shan't sleep tonight if you tell me more of ghosts.
I hope there's no plague or fever coming. All this looks very like it. The swineherd's young wife died only a week ago, and she was quite well but the day before. She dreamt that something took her by the throat. She sank afterwards and died before a week. Papa says such horrible fancies do accompany some forms of fever.
A swineherd's wife? Well... Her funeral is over, I hope, and her hymns sung, and our ears shan't be tortured for her. Like this.
Carmilla, are you ill? Your face.
Close. Come close to me. Hold my hand. Tight. Tight.
Oh, you're crushing my hand.
I'm sorry. It is passing now. You see what comes of strangling people with hymns.
Carmilla, I don't understand. Sometimes you are the gentlest friend I could ever imagine. And sometimes I...
Dearest, do not think me cruel. I obey the irresistible law of my strength and weakness. If your dear heart is wounded, my wild heart bleeds with yours.
You have not wounded me, dear Carmilla.
I fear I have, but you see I cannot help it. In the rapture of my enormous humiliation, I live in your warm life, and you shall die, sweetly die, into mine. I cannot help it. As I draw near to you, you will draw near to others, and learn the rapture of that cruelty which is love.
What can you mean by all this? I remind you, perhaps, of someone whom you love? But you must not speak so. I hate it. I scarcely know you. I don't know myself when you look so and talk so.
My darling, seek to know no more of me or mine.
Please.
Trust me. Trust me with all your loving spirit.
That night, I had a dream. I saw, or thought I saw, the room and its furniture, just as I had seen them last, except that it was very dark. For as long as I can remember, I have left a candle burning as I sleep, but there was no sign of its comforting glow. I saw something moving at the foot of the bed. A figure whose face and form I could not see, save only two dull points of red, like the embers of a dying fire. It approached slowly, ever closer. In the last moment before it reached me, I seemed to hear a voice coming not from my visitor, but from far, far away, sweetly and tenderly, with a terrible urgency, it whispered. But the glowing coals were already inches from my face, and suddenly I felt a stinging pain, as if two large needles darted an inch or two into my breast. I tried to scream, but I couldn't breathe. I walked with a scream. The room was warmly lit by candlelight, and I saw a female figure standing at the foot of the bed. A block of stone could not have been more still. There was not the slightest stir of respiration. Her nightdress was stained a wine dark red. As I stared at it, the figure appeared to have changed its place and was now nearer the door. Then, close to it, the door opened, and it passed out. I was relieved, and able to breathe and move again. My first thought was that Carmilla had been playing a trick, and that I had forgotten to secure my door. I hastened to it, only to find it locked from the inside. I was afraid to open it. I was horrified! I sprang into my bed and covered up my head in my bedclothes and lay there, more dead than alive, till morning.
And yet, your sleep every night for 3 whole weeks, Fraulein, has been accompanied by an increasing languor,
My exhaustion, Doctor.
She complains more and more of suffocation. Her color, Monsieur, she's so pale.
This sensation of needles you mentioned, Fraulein. There, exactly.
Here, Doctor. Over my heart.
Ah, My God.
What is it?
The scars. Two tiny white scars.
But how could she suffer, sir, from those? They can be no more than insect bites.
Herr Loriston, do you know the stories? Myths, you would call them, tales, that they tell here in our Black Forest?
Oh, mon Dieu, I have heard them all, monsieur. My German mother would tell tales to chill the blood.
Tales of disease?
Of those who bring it. Fräulein, after those needles, as you call them, is there any other sensation?
It is a little like bathing.
I do not understand.
It's like the pleasant cold thrill you feel when you swim upstream against the current of the river. In the heart of that cold, warm lips are kissing me.
Yes.
I sometimes wish I never had to wake up.
Ma petite chère, what is happening to her? Oh, God help us.
Caroline, you must not feel so. You must resist. To love your destroyer is to be lost.
My destroyer?
Dr. Walden, what are you saying?
I do not know how you will believe me, but you must. Your daughter is...
Loriston! Loriston!
My God, that's...
Forgive my haste, old friend. I've ridden through the night, lest she escape me. Oh, you're not alone.
Spielstorff, we did not expect you so suddenly. May I present Dr. Walden, General Spielstorff?
Herr General.
Herr Doctor.
My daughter, Margaret.
Welcome, sir.
Our governess, Madame Peridon.
Monsieur, you have arrived in dark times.
My dear Fräulein, my child, you're ill.
Well enough to be thankful that you are here at last, General.
Oh.
Friedrich, what's wrong?
She is so like my Elizabeth, even to her pallor. God send her a better deliverance.
We are all so grieved to hear...
I will grieve for my daughter, Fräulein. Oh, I will grieve when I have first had vengeance on the devils that killed her.
Killed her?
As surely as a dagger to the heart. Listen, and you will hear how my blindness, my folly, sent my darling to the grave. You too, Doctor, hear me. Hear how little your science knows of things that walk the night.
I am listening.
Early this summer, my dear Elizabeth and I attended a magnificent masked ball at a neighboring castle. When the fireworks were ended and the dancing began, I realized that a young lady and her chaperone, masked and richly dressed, had been following my daughter with extraordinary interest. Suddenly, the older woman was beside me.
General Spielstorff, I believe.
You have me at a disadvantage, madam.
Do you not know who I am?
If madam would but remove her mask.
No, I must not. Though we are older and better friends than perhaps you suspect, Friedrich.
Madam, you embarrass me, if you would but say...
Soon, Friedrich, soon. You will know everything. But for a brief time, I must implore your aid as an old friend... whose honor will ask no more.
I know not what to say.
I have this moment received news from afar, and must leave at once on a journey of life and death, in which to lose an hour is to lose all. My poor ward cannot come with me. She is still delicate from an accident. I plead with you, I beg you, take my poor Millarca under your protection. I know she will be safe for the brief time I shall be absent. Oh, consent and save a desperate woman.
Madam, with the best will in the world, how can I? I know not your ward at all.
She is Millarca, a countess of the family Karnstein, a name to honor any house. Oh, look, Friedrich, see how she and your daughter are friends already? Look. Milarka takes her hand and your daughter looks radiant.
I turned to look and it was true. My daughter was entranced by her new companion. I turned back and amidst the swirling dances, my masked interrogator was gone. The next moment, my darling daughter came to me, innocent as a fawn, pleading with me to invite Milarka into our home. I relented and did.
Karnstein. There's a ruined chapel of the Karnsteins here in the forest. But the last member of the family, the Countess Mircalla, died 200 years ago.
She was buried, yes, but she does not rest.
Mon Dieu, such a horror!
Friedrich, madame, what are you suggesting?
Herr Loriston, I think that I understand. You claim, General, that your daughter was murdered?
Within 3 weeks, my Elizabeth sank and died. Every morning she was paler, weaker, more lifeless. She suffocated slowly, whispering terrible dreams. Milarka was always by her side, so loving.
And on her breast, or perhaps her throat, two tiny scars, like the scratches of a pin.
You know? You believe?
Your friends, General, your friends believe now, too. Don't you, Herr Loriston?
Milarka. Mircalla.
Carmilla! General, we have a house guest named Carmilla. She was left behind with us by an unknown lady on a desperate journey. General, look at my daughter's scar.
God in Himmel. Her mark! She's here? The devil I hunt is here! There, show me where she is.
At this hour, she keeps to her room.
Le petit démon Carmilla rises late.
Friedrich, I will go with you.
No, David, I will go alone.
But
her destruction must be by my hand. Your daughter still lives. You must be here to take care of her.
God be with you, monsieur.
Perhaps Carmilla saw the general arrive. Perhaps some instinct of her kind had warned her. But General Spielsdorf found an empty room, cold, as though it had never been inhabited. Of course, it never really had. I can only imagine that Carmilla spent her resting hours in that long-forgotten chapel at the Karnstein ruins. It was her home, after all. On moonlit nights, I walk where we walked together and remember. God forgive me. I miss her, and I smile at my reflection to see that the scars do not heal. Often, from such a reverie, I have started fancying. I heard the light step of Carmilla at the drawing room door.
Margaret. Margaret.
Quite an ending, don't you think? The forces of light were definitely not victorious here. Carmilla still haunts her prey. Spielsdorf still hasn't vanquished his prey, and we leave on an unresolved note with no decapitation. Pity. Still, there was enough corruption and darkness to go around, wasn't there? Certainly there was quite enough for poor Margaret, that sweet, innocent, naive young lady, so ready to accept a warm offer of companionship, and so loyal, too. Right from the start, I could tell she was the type of person who'd stick her neck out for a friend. Oh, come now, surely I'm entitled to tell a horrible joke every now and then. And speaking of all things odoriferous, is that the smell of garlic I detect in my library? Have some of you already taken steps to ward off further peril? And where did you get that garlic anyway? It won't work, you know. Garlic will not drive away vampires. It may annoy them just as it is annoying me, for there is no food allowed by the circulation desk. You will just have to enjoy your stench out in the antechamber. Say, that's not a bad idea. Why don't you all get up for a moment or two and indulge yourselves in a sweet or a stretch? There's a particular book in the stacks I think wants to meet you. I shall retrieve the volume and return shortly.
And so ends part two of our live Halloween trilogy, Tomes of Terror 2. The next episode of the Post-Meridian Radio Pod will feature our final play of the evening, an adaptation of William Hope Hodgson's seabound thriller, The Stone Ship. If you'd like to learn more about Nightfall, check out the Nightfall 25 project at www.nightfall-25.com. Thanks again for downloading our show. This is Neil Marsh, signing off for the PMR Pod. Episode number 2 of the Post-Meridian Radio Pod, Carmilla, featured Amy Lee Bennett as Margaret Lauriston, Nick Zenzian as David Lauriston, Gilly Rosenthal as Madame Peridon, Doc Madison as General Spielsdorf, Maria McGavro as the Dark Lady, Sarah Fernandez as Carmilla, Atish Salvi as Dr. Walden, and Jenny Gutzbazal and Michael DiLoretto as the Dark Voices. Mindy Klenoff and Andy Stabler were the Foley effects artists. Carmilla was directed by Renee Johnson, with production assistance from Leslie Drescher. The technical production team for Tomes of Terror 2 featured engineering and sound design by Neil Marsh, musical arrangement and accompaniment by Jessica Rain, lighting and onstage electronics by Stephanie Shanda, and Foley effects coordination by Shauna Francis. The Librarian was created and written for by Rob Noyes, and was played by the mysterious Rennie Boy. The Tomes of Terror theme and transitional music were composed by Kevin Hartnell. The administrative producer for Tomes of Terror 2 was Renee Johnson. This episode of the Post-Meridian Radio Pod was written and produced by Neil Marsh. This has been a Hub of the Universe Productions podcast.